This week's Dvar Torah, I'd like to focus on the section of Parsha Shoftim that deals with the issue of the Kohen Mashuach Milchama. The Kohen, of course, who would get up before Klal Yisrael would go out to fight a war, and he would give a major speech, an inspirational speech, to inspire the troops. And part of the job also that the Torah tells us that the Kohen Mashuach Milchama would have to do was to discourage those who should not be going out to war, those who are better off going home. And he was to tell them that they had no business going out to war. Who are these people? So he would say, Mi ha'ish asher banu bayis chadosh v'lo chanecho, Mi ha'ish asher nata kerem v'lo chilolo, Mi ha'ish asher eres isha v'lo lekacha. People who are at the very beginning stages of building a new house, right after building a new house, right after planting a new vineyard, someone who had just gotten married. And after announcing that these three exemptions, these three categories of people would be exempt from the milchama, the Torah adds a fourth exemption. V'yosva shotum l'daber la'am v'amru, mi ha'ish ha'yarei v'rach ha'levav, yelech v'yashav l'beiso, v'lo yimasas levav achiv kilvavo. Someone who's afraid has no business fighting in a war. Troop morale is very important to any war effort, and therefore, if you're going to go out to war and you're going to be terrified, how's the guy that's in the trenches with you going to feel? It ends up being contagious. People are going to be scared, and people are going to be fighting scared, and they're not going to be successful. It's not a good idea to have soldiers who are terrified. But the Gemara in Sota records a machlokas. The Gemara in Sota, Daf Mem Dalet, has a machlokas about what exactly this fear is. What exactly are we concerned that people are afraid of before they go to war? So the Pasha Pshat, one would imagine, is Rabbi Akiva Shita. Rabbi Akiva says, Hayare v'racha levav, kimashma'o. It means what it sounds like. Why is someone afraid to go to war? Why is anybody afraid to go to war? People don't like confrontation. They certainly don't like fighting against people who are strong and who are well equipped and who have guns and who have knives, who have swords, who have armor. People aren't interested. It's terrifying. It's scary to go out to battle. Going out to battle is not a fun thing to do. So that's the Pasha Pshat. Someone who's going to see a cheriv, he's going to see someone with a drawn sword coming to attack him, and his heart is going to melt, and he's going to be unable to function. So such a person is exempt from going out to fight the wars for Klal Yisrael. However, Rabbi Yossi Aglili has a totally different pshat. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, Hayare v'racha levav, zehu hamisyare min ha'averos shabiyado. No, someone who's afraid, it doesn't mean someone who's afraid of swords and guns. Everyone's afraid of that. Someone who's afraid means he's afraid that he's not going to be successful in the milchama because he knows in his heart of hearts that he's done averos, and therefore when push comes to shove and he finds himself in a dangerous situation, he feels that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to protect him. He has averos shebiyado, and that's why it's in fact for this person that the Torah gives other exemptions. Did the Torah really need to exempt someone who just built a house or planted a vineyard? Not really, but says Rabbi Yossi Aglili. But if the only exemption were that someone who's afraid of his averos can go back home, anyone who would walk out at the time would obviously be saying about themselves in a very public way that they're avaryamin, that they're people who violate averos, in order not to humiliate them, or yet worse, not to cause them to not to make them hesitate to return and cause them to go out to a war that they have no business fighting. The Torah gives other exemptions. So when you see someone walking away from the speech and turning back to go home, you can assume in your mind, maybe he's not an avarian. Maybe the reason he's going home is because he just built a house, he just planted a vineyard, he just got married, something of that nature. But Rabbi Yossi Aglili's comment is really amazing. Someone who's afraid of averos, such a person is not going to be matzliach in milchama, and therefore we don't want him fighting the milchama. What's interesting, though, is that when you think of someone who's afraid of averos, we can probably think of many examples of averos that are worth being afraid of averos that people commonly do, whether it be lashon hara, maybe dishonesty in business, that people have the right to be afraid that maybe they're not going to be successful in war, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't be on their side. But when Chazal had to give an example of such an avera, what kind of avera does a person do that he's going to be afraid and he needs to return from war? Say Chazal, sach ben tefila letefila, avera hi biyado, v'chozer alah me'orchei amelchama. Someone who speaks between putting on the tefillin shal yad and putting on the tefillin shal rosh, he's mafsik in the middle, and he speaks between the two, such a person has violated an avera that's serious enough that he should have to go back from Orchei HaMelchama, that he shouldn't be able to fight in the war. Now the obvious question is, of all the averos to come up with, of all the examples to come up with, even if you want to express the idea that even a slight avera is enough to be chozer me'orchei HaMelchama, why choose this example? There are thousands of examples of things that people could potentially do wrong that should frighten them when they're in a life and death situation of a melchama. Why do Chazal pinpoint this situation? Someone who sach ben tefila l'tefila, of all the potential examples that Chazal could have found. Second question. The Gemara Maseches Yevamos and Daf Dalet records in Machlokes whether we're Dorish Smuchim or we're not Dorish Smuchim, whether the juxtaposition of two parshios in the Torah is meant to teach us something, or it's just a matter of coincidence that the two parshios are next to each other, and we can't derive any halachos or any messages necessarily from the smichos parshios. However, even Rabbi Yehuda, who normally is not Dorish Smuchim, agrees that when it comes to Mishnah Torah, when it comes to Sefer Devarim, we're for sure Dorish Smuchim. Juxtaposition of parashios certainly is critical, and certainly is something that can be used to teach various halachos and messages. And therefore, it seems obvious that we have to take a closer look at the arrangement of the parashios in Sefer Devarim and try to figure out the Seder HaDevarim, try to figure out why it is that certain parashios are placed next to others. One example is the beginning of this week's parsha. This is what I want to explore a little bit. The beginning of this week's parsha, Shoftim V'Shotrim, is all about law and order, appointing a police force, appointing judges in each and every city, B'chol Sha'arecha, having in all of the cities, B'chol Yir V'Yir, B'chol Plach U'Plach, to use the Lashon of the Rambam, in all of the different cities in Klal Yisrael, make sure that we have people who are able to enforce our system of justice. Yet, if you look back at the end of Parshas Re'eh, the end of last week's Parsha, what was the topic? Shalosh Regalim. The mitzvah of observing the Shalosh Regalim. What in the world is the connection between the Shalosh Regalim, the three times of the year that we go up to the Olah L'Regel, to Yerushalayim, to visit HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Shoftim V'Shotrim V'Chol Sha'arecha, and the law and order that we have to make sure is running smoothly in all of the neighborhoods where there are Jews? So I think in order to answer these questions, it's worthwhile to take a look at the beginning of the seventh perek of Sefer Shoftim, not Parsha Shoftim, but Sefer Shoftim in Navi. In Sefer Shoftim, the Navi tells us, of course, about the cycle of Shoftim that continued time and time again, where Klal Yisrael would be sent to Shofet to put them on the right path and help them. And in Perek Zayin, it's the middle of the Navi is in the middle of a discussion of Gidon, who's a very interesting figure, very interesting person, very interesting shofet. And the Navi tells us at one particular point, Gidon had to wage a war with Midian. So what did he do? He gathered together as many soldiers as he could find, and he had 32,000 people ready to go to battle against Midian. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Gidon, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him in Pasuk Beis of Perek Zayin, Vayomer Hashem el Gidon, Rav Ha'am Asher Itach Mititias Midian Biadam. That's too large an army to win a war against Midian. Pen Yispa'er Alay Yisrael Emor Yadi Oshiali. You know why it's too large an army? How can you have too large an army to win a war? Adrabah, if it's larger, it should be more successful, it should be more capable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, that's not the way these wars work. These wars work from the Yad Hashem. And if you have such a large army, they're going to think that their victories are a result of their own strength, of their own capabilities, of their own power. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's not going to work that way. The army needs to get smaller to the extent that it needs to be clearly recognized by every single soldier on that battlefield, that if they're successful, that success can be attributed directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in fact, Gidon has to narrow down the size of his army. First, by those who are afraid are knocked out. 22,000 soldiers are knocked out right away. 10,000 are remaining. Then he does a test by the water, famous test we're not going to get into now. And at the end of the day, he had 300 soldiers. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, perfect. now we could fight a melchama. What do you see from the story? That when a Jewish soldier goes out to war, when a Jewish army goes out to war, the Jewish army has to go out with the realization that our Kodesh Baruch Hu is behind him, is behind that army, and will protect them. If the soldier begins to think, Kochi va'otzim yadi asali asachayel hazeh, the soldier begins to take credit in his own power, his own strength, he's not fitting to be a Jewish soldier. The Jewish soldier must see that the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same God of the Beis Medrash and the Beis HaKnesses, is also there with them on the battlefield. It's not that there are two sides to life. There's the spiritual side of life, where we do the rituals and we follow what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, and then there's the physical and mundane side, where we fight our melchamos void of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No, the very same Ribbono Shel Olam that tells us to do the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom HaKippurim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim tells us how to go about up to approaching a battle. When somebody fails to make that connection between the spiritual inspiration and the physical actions, he is chozer mimarchei hamelchama. Someone who doesn't understand that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's going with him to battle. Someone who sees it as something that's removed from his religious service should not be fighting a war for Klal Yisrael. Based on this, general notion, although he didn't give this example, Rabbi Benjamin Yudin, I saw in the Dvar Torah, suggested that that's the pshat between, that's the pshat when Chazal say that someone who is sach bin tefila l'tefila, someone who speaks between the tefillin shal yad and the tefillin shal rosh, is chozer mimarchei hamelchama. The purpose of the tefillin shal yad, as is printed in the Sidurim, in the text of the L'Shem Yichud, and even if you don't say the L'Shem Yichud, which most non-Hasidim do not say those first two lines of L'Shem Yichud, but the actual text of the following paragraph, where we describe the mitzvah of tefillin, so we describe the tefillin shel yad, L'shabed bazet taivos u'machshavos libeinu la'avodaso, to channel all of our actions toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu, while the tefillin shel rosh reflect the intellect and the belief system of the Jew. The person who is sach bin tefila l'tefila is someone who has divorced the God of intellect from the God of Maisa. He fails to see the kesher between the time he spends in the Beis HaMedrash and the Beis HaKnesses and the time he spends on the battlefield. Such a person is chozer mimarchei hamelchama. A person who can't connect the intellectual, spiritual, religious experience with the physical mundane experiences, and he can't allow his physical and mundane experience to be touched by religion and to be molded by the Ratzon Hashem, such a person has no right going out to fight a melchama for the Jewish people. And that also may explain the connection between the parsha of the Shalosh Regalim and the commandment of Shoftim V'Shotrim Mechol Sharecha. While it's absolutely crucial that we get inspired on all three pilgrimages up to Yerushalayim, the real test will be what happens after the Yom Tovim are over. Will we live our daily lives with the safeguards to ensure that we carry the message of the Yom Tovim forward? It's easy to be a Jew who goes to Yerushalayim and is inspired, who sees that we're olal regel, and you see all the Jews coming to Yerushalayim, and you see the avodah, and you see everything going on. You see the kohanim b'avodasam, levim b'duchanam. That's religion. That's spirituality. Who can't be inspired by that? But what happens when you go home and you start your business up again, and you have to be involved in dine mamonis? So then, are you acting like a Jew? Are you acting like someone who's touched by religion? Someone who's molded by the Ratzon Hashem? Shoftim v'shotim b'chol sha'arecha is what's required. We need to make sure that we have an infrastructure waiting for us, where our daily lives, where everything we do, our 9-to-5, becomes something that's molded by the inspirational moments of our lives, by that which is so clear to us that is attributable to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Based on this, I think we can resolve a few other issues. We're told the king is supposed to have, in this morning, in this week's parsha, in Parsha Shoftim, we're told the king is supposed to have a second Sefer Torah that he carries with him at all times. Perhaps the message is the same. He carries the second Sefer Torah to demonstrate to all of Klal Yisrael that all of his comings and goings relate directly to the Torah. No political decision, no meeting with a foreign dignitary, no personal time is unaffected by the Torah. Everything he does is touched by Torah and is molded by Torah. We often refer to one of the most heroic events in the history of Klal Yisrael as Akedas Yitzchak. Now, of all the terms we could use to describe this event, we could have used the term Ha'alas Yitzchak, bringing Yitzchak up on the Mizbeach, something of that nature, but what do we use? Akedas Yitzchak. What does Akeda mean? You ever think about what the word means? The word means Akeda, the binding of Yitzchak to the Mizbeach. Why do we focus on the binding of Yitzchak? Was that really the main point? Wasn't it the Ratzon of Yitzchak to go in the first place? The Mesiris Nefesh of Yitzchak? Why the binding of Yitzchak? So the Shem Natov explains, the Chazal tell us that Yitzchak asked Avram to tie him more tightly lest he jump from fear and ruin the entire Karban. Now what we see from here is that Yitzchak, in his moment of great inspiration, where he was feeling the Ava to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a level that is so unusual and such a high madrega, and he was willing to give up his life because that was the Ratzon Hashem, was not only caught up in the moment, but was thinking about what's going to happen when my father comes at me with that knife and I'm not feeling so inspired. Then I might jump, then I might move, then I might ruin the entire Karban. So he took that moment of inspiration and he used it to set up an infrastructure at that time within which he was going to be able to succeed even after the inspiration would leave him, even after the challenges to that inspiration would start coming. And he would make sure that nothing is going to ruin this moment, that nothing is going to ruin his Avdus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nothing is going to undermine this effort. So he tells his father, put this safeguard in place. Tie me up, and that's what we celebrate. It's not the moment of Mesiris Nefesh that we celebrate. That's wonderful. But what did he do with that moment? He used that moment to make sure that it would be lasting. It's the Akedas Yitzchak, the binding up of Yitzchak, which reflected Yitzchak's forward thinking into how he's going to react as time goes on. I think this message is a very clear one. We have inspiring moments in our lives. We have times that we associate with deep religious feelings, and there's certainly no time in the calendar year more so than the next 40 days or so that we associate with a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chodesh Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and then even afterwards, the Yom Tov of Sukkot, we feel very close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a truly inspiring time of the year. But that's not the whole job. It's not enough to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Yom Noraim. That's not so difficult to do. To see HaKadosh Baruch Hu during those times of year, during this time of year, is not the greatest challenge in the world. The greatest challenge is not only to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaKnesset and Beis HaMedrash, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the battlefield, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chol sha'arecha, in our 9-to-5s, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, halavai, there should still be such a thing as a 9-to-5, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu everywhere, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu wherever we go, in everything that we do. And the trick is, how are we able to do that? Yitzchak taught us the lesson. We have to think ahead. We can't just allow ourselves to be inspired now and then go with the flow as the rest of the year goes on by. We have to think ahead. Okay, right now I feel inspired. Right now I decided I want to daven a certain way, I want to learn a certain way, I want to act a certain way toward other people. What kind of system do I need to set up to make sure that on a Tuesday in January, I'm still going to be acting in that way? That's still going to be important to me? What kind of measures do I need to put in place to make sure that I'm going to live within this framework and with these ideas always at the center of my attention? How am I going to be able to do it that even when I'm not living through this inspirational time, I'm still going to be able to live with that high level of dedication to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So I think the message from this morning's parasha is to view these next 40 days or so, 50 days, as an opportunity to think about things, to think about what direction we're going in life, and to think about how we're going to make sure that next year is not going to be the same as last year. And not just how we're going to daven better this month, because that, of course, we're going to do. How we're going to daven amazingly on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, of course we're going to do that. but to think about how we're really going to make a difference this time, to think about what kind of Akeda we can do. What's our parallel to the Akedas Yitzchak? What kind of system can we set up in order to make sure that we have a successful year?